charts and the years of experience it took staring at hundreds of thousands of charts to achieve this expertise. When I catch some guys falling in love with their charts, I simply state, all the best traders on our desk have learned how to read the tape. G-Man, Moneymaker, Dr. Momentum, J. Toma, The Yipster, Z-Money, Mr. Spencer, Franchise, G, Tickster, Roy. You will not become a good intraday trader if you do not develop this skill. It's up to you. How do I read the tape? There are old-school traders who have now transitioned to charts exclusively, or so they think. They started reading the tape and then gravitated toward charts. But they still use their reading the tape skills. They undervalue these skills because they are so focused on their chart patterns. But they exit positions that are not working for them right away because of the tape. They choose entry points superior to lesser traders because of, yes, their ability to read the tape. I know when I am making technical plays that I exit trades when I do not like the price action. I can just tell by the way a stock prints or how the offers step down if a stock may not hold an important technical support level. And so I exit. Sometimes my decisions are so fragile that if you pressed me, I could not verbalize exactly what I saw from the tape that made me exit. I kinda know it when I see it, based upon years of just watching the damn tape. Every so often, we invite potential candidates to visit our desk and sit in on a video review session. We were considering a middle-aged gentleman who had worked his whole life in IT at Goldman. On this Saturday, he sat watching film with our desk. As we watch, I will call out where a stock is a buy or a sale, so our guys learn where to buy and sell. After the class, this gentleman approached me. IT guy. Mike, had you traded BBT on that day? Bella. No. IT guy. How did you know when it would go up and down? You kept predicting where it would trade. Bella. I was reading the tape. He looked at me incredulously. IT guy. But you were never wrong. Bella. I did have a good feel for that stock. IT guy. That was incredible how you did that. Did you really think I would leave this anecdote out of my book? If you are a trader who has started your career underperforming and have not developed the skill of reading the tape, then please do not get discouraged. And do me a favor, please. Go find your trading results, put them in the shredder, and move on with your trading career. It is too hard to start your career exclusively by reading the charts. If you do so, you are trading with the equivalent of one hand tied behind your back. You are missing an immensely important skill. Learn how to read the tape. Remember that the best part of trading is that tomorrow you can start getting better. Well-rounded traders know how to read the tape. They also know all the little trading tricks to improve their P&L, a little something I like to call scoring, which will be discussed in Chapter 9. Chapter 9. Maximizing your profits with scoring. Some prop traders, as long as they take home a decent-sized check every month, are content. Not me, and certainly not any of the traders I employ. There are always ways to squeeze more profits out of each trade, just by some basic tweaking. I call it scoring. Scoring, simply put, is the skill of maximizing your P&L. Professional golfers often comment, I struck the ball solidly, but I didn't score well. Fortunately for me, I don't have this problem. Generally, I don't hit the ball well, thus I don't have the opportunity to not score well. Similarly, a basketball commentator often differentiates a shooter from a scorer. As a professional trader, you can make good trades during the month, yet not maximize your P&L. Do you score well? There are steps that you can take to ensure that you are scoring well. You can sit at your trading station all month with the same skills as those around you, equal preparation, the same market opportunities, but end up with a P&L far worse than the guy sitting next to you, despite all things being equal. Economists call this ceteris paribus, for any Latin geeks listening to this book. So let's discuss a few things that will help you maximize your trading paycheck at the end of the month. Let's discuss how to score as a trader. Setting your maximum intraday trading loss. First things first, set a max intraday trading loss. There will be days when you just do not have it. Most traders trade 48 to 50 weeks a year, 5 days a week. Is it likely that you will be on every single one of those days? As someone who's been doing this for over a decade, I can tell you outright, no. Traders are on par with professional athletes, as our job is entirely performance-based. Win or go home, so to speak. Remember that great Michael Jordan commercial when he talked about how many times he failed in his career? I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life, and that is why I succeed. Just like Michael Jordan was off on certain nights on the court, so will you be on certain days in the market. Why do you think coaches pull their players when they are not playing well? They are more harmful on the field than off. When you are underperforming, you are hurting your team and your trading business. You need a system to yank yourself over to the bench. A stop loss is your answer. When you first begin, set your max intraday loss for half of your median gross P&L. So if you make $1,000 gross on a median positive day, then set your maximum loss limit at $500. As you become more experienced, you can adjust this max loss limit to half of your last best trading day. But even the most experienced trader must set a limit. Over the years, I have learned to become a very consistent trader. But in the fall of 2008, I was having a horrid day. I got caught in multiple reversals, my kryptonite, and was down a lot for me. Make sure whatever trading platform you use has a loss limit feature. SMB uses Lightspeed, the best intraday equities platform available as I write. We had switched from another platform to Lightspeed about 12 months before this ripper of a day. And on this day, I went to enter some new orders. They were not going in. Then the following transpired. Bella. Anyone having trouble entering orders? Steve. Not me. G-Man. No problems, Bella. Bella. What the... expletive deleted. I still can't enter my orders. The Enforcer. Did you hit your loss limit? Bella. I don't even know what my loss limit is. So I called up the Lightspeed help desk. Sure enough, I had hit my loss limit, but didn't know it. It took me a year on Lightspeed to have a day where I was marked down enough to even learn that I had a loss limit. Hey, I told you I am a consistent trader. Bella. Can you raise my loss limit, please? Lightspeed help desk. Okay, have your manager call in the request. Have my manager send in the request. This is one of those moments where you quickly calculate three responses. Two are not appropriate. One might be, I am too rich and famous to deal with this nonsense, son, so get me some more buying power, pronto. And then there is a third, which I chose. Bella, aren't I the manager? Lightspeed help desk. I don't know. Are you a manager? Bella, you know, I would hope so at this point, but on some days, based on how my desk ignores me, sometimes I wonder. The nice young man at the help desk raised my loss limit. Apparently, I do have manager status. It had been much lower than half of my last best trading day. And thanks to my Lightspeed interlude, I actually saved thousands, since my dopey orders, if executed, would have manifested larger losses. Steve has a tendency to exceed his max intraday loss. We have code words, just like when we were playing high school basketball, which, if spoken by me, informs Steve that he is done for the day. Since we are so creative, my code word to him is Mr. Spencer. When Steve hears Mr. Spencer from me, he knows to trade out his positions and then shut it down for the day. This saves him thousands every month. Even the best of traders like Mr. Spencer have set loss limits. So should you. trading based upon the time of day. I tailor my trading based upon the time of day, the open, midday, or close. Dr. Steenbarger coached Dr. Momentum that each time period should be treated like a different business. I trade with the most size, most frequently during historically my most profitable time period. Makes sense, no? I trade best on the open, meaning I make the most money on the open. My trading statistics confirm this. As such, I increase my size during this time and make more trades. The open tends to last about an hour. My stats also show that during the midday, I do the worst. So I lower my tier size and keep my stops tight. I only make trades that offer the best risk-reward during this period and make fewer trades. Into the close, stocks are more directional, so I stick with those that are trending up or down in the last hour of the trading day. I raise my tier size from the midday, but not as high as on the open. The danger of midday trading. As I just said, the midday period, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., is the most difficult and least profitable time of day for me. I am not alone. Why? The market is slower. There is less volume and liquidity. A small order can cause a stock to move much more than you would anticipate. More strange moves in which you are not able to quantify, such as a surprise news announcement, do not allow you to calculate risk-reward as you would normally. A good trader makes note of what time of day it is, when he trades most profitably, and adjusts his trading to fit such times. There will be favorable risk versus reward opportunities midday, but much of this time for me will be spent finding stocks to trade into the close when the volume picks up. Following is a list of adjustments you should consider for midday trading if this is your worst time period. Increase your intensity and focus. Lower your tier size to the lowest size of the day. Wait for great entry points. Take your profits quickly. Don't double down. Lower your loss limits to the tightest of the day. This is the most dangerous time of the day. A small order can move most stocks significantly. Be disciplined. Sometimes good trading is not trading at all. Stocks purposely appear tempting, yet are, in fact, not favorable risk-reward scenarios. Most importantly, gather information for the close. Watch the stocks trade. Search for trading ideas. Check www.briefing.com for economic news releases coming out. Gather some ideas from the traders around you. Find support and resistance levels, and set your alerts for these levels. New and developing traders tend to overtrade midday, and we see this on our desk. As such, we have implemented rules to regulate this. Basically, midday is just for exploiting our best setups and gathering valuable trading information for the close. If you are overtrading during the midday, you are not maximizing your P&L. In fact, it's a great time to give back a lot of the gains you might have made on the open. Your numbers at the end of the month will not reflect your true trading potential. Make the most trades with the most size during the trading periods that statistically are most profitable for you. Money saved during your weaker trading periods is money earned. Consistency. Everyone knows someone at some firm making a killing. Everyone. Even the new traders. And new and developing traders tend to overvalue this information. I want to be like so-and-so, big man on the desk, at XYZ firm, Chops Bank and More Chops Trading, LLC, who makes mid-seven figures. These newbies then develop theories about how to become that trader and bank that mid-seven figures. Oh, do they develop theories. I need to learn how to take pain, is one thought entering their minds. One of our guys, Playmaker, believes this. This drives Jay Toma and the rest of the senior staff nuts. The fact is that most trades you make will start working for you right away. But the new traders also hold stocks that are trading against them longer because they mistakenly believe this is how you improve. But common sense tells us that when a stock trades against your predetermined exit price, holding it only increases the chances that you will lose even more money. Baby Steps. Mark Sperling of T3 Capital, considered one of the great day traders on the street, came to speak to our firm in the summer of 2009. Mark is one of those traders who everyone wants to be, probably because his annual P&L is among the highest of those in our tight-knit community. Mark counseled that becoming great takes time. There is a process that every trader must go through. You cannot skip steps. When he first traded, he was positive every single day. He made sure that each day he stepped outside his comfort zone to get a little better. He got better slowly, incrementally, while remaining consistently profitable. Stepping outside one's comfort zone, while initially painful, pays great dividends down the road. New traders mistakenly think that losing $5,000 is how they will learn how to make $5,000. This is not true. To make $5,000, you must first learn to make $500 consistently. Then you can gun for $800. Losing $5,000 in a day when you begin only teaches you how to lose $5,000 and how to trade irresponsibly. As Bill Murray said in the film What About Bob? Baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. I am amazed at the new traders who have never made over $10,000 in a month, who do not recognize that 17 out of 20 days at $700 a day is a pretty good month. Do the math here. 17 days at $700 a day is $11,900. Assuming the loss limit is $500 a day, typical for a new trader, the three negative days take the total down to $10,400. Still not a bad month while just beginning. There are so many traders capable of doing this, yet they do not achieve this goal because they are focused on making the elusive $10,000 in a day, an opportunity that is seldom available given their undeveloped skills. This five-figure-a-day goal is counterproductive. Your goal is to make as much as you can as you are developing and improving, not to show how much you can lose by trying to be a trader you are not ready to be. Here is what I see too often from my seat. I spot a new trader with the ability to make money. He has two solid days a week, so I know he can do it. But then there are two other days when he starts negative, gets more negative, and then finishes much more negative. If you can learn to eliminate one day a week from negative to flat, you can substantially increase your take-home. If you look at G-Man's numbers at the end of the month, he is generally gross positive 17 out of 20 days a month. Same with me, for that matter. This should be your goal while building your trading account. Ask yourself how much you can make at this point in your career so that you are gross positive 17 out of 20 days in the month. Achieve this goal, and then next month, start working on an incrementally better P&L. Remember, baby steps. Proper sizing. There exists a myth that you need to trade with huge size to make significant profits. Loading up on size is called for at times when the risk-reward is in your favor, but you need to be able to handle the size. There is plenty of money to be made trading with modest size, especially in active stocks. You can make a lot of money trading in and out of an active stock with small size. Likewise, you can lose a great deal of money trading in and out of an active stock with too much size. Develop your trading skills, build your trading account, and slowly increase your size. Traders ask, do high-risk parameters affect your trading approach? Let's take a look at this email I received from a developing trader. Mike, since you are a consistent profitable trader, what would happen if you increased your positions in Apple, for example, from 2,000 shares to 7,500 at a time? Can you follow your set of rules with 3.5 times the additional risk with the same comfort? At what point does your consistent trading have to change because of the unusual high risk parameters? Neil. When determining my trading size, I calculate first where I can exit if I am wrong. Remember, traders first have to ask themselves before entering a trade, what's my downside? I can often get out of 1,000 shares for a small loss. Rarely can I exit that same trade with 5,000 shares in an Apple at the same price. And if this is the case, then my trade is completely different. I repeat, when making a trade, our downside should be a ratio of 1 with an upside of 5. If, with my extra size, I now cannot exit with the same risk-reward ratio, I almost always cannot add this extra size. Also, it is a lot easier to exit if a stock trades in my favor for 1,000 shares than 5,000 shares. If it will be harder for me to exit if my position works for me with 5,000 shares, then I must factor this in as well. Franchise. Finding your right size. Listen in on this conversation between Franchise and me in the fall of 2009. Bella. What happened today? Franchise. I'm working on increasing my position size by 100%. I can't figure out how to do this in some plays. Bella. I like that. You will not be able to do this in all of your trading plays. To increase your size by that 100%, you will have to be more selective. You will not be able to exit that extra size while maintaining the same risk-reward with all of your trading plays. Some of them, but not all of them. We had an intern in 2008 who asked one of our traders why we just didn't open all of our trades with 100,000 shares. Alan Farley said it well. Experienced traders control risk. Inexperienced traders chase gains. The intern did not last long. When you trade with too much size, you do not prove that you can handle more size. All you do is prove you are not ready to handle this extra size. You should, as a trader, work on increasing your size with select trades. But again, this should be done incrementally. You cannot jump from 1,000 share positions to 5,000 without many steps in between. Again, do not pretend to be a trader you are not. The Steve Cohens of the world weren't moving markets on day one with their volume. And I know for certain that many readers trade with too much size on the wrong trades. My email box is saturated with anecdotes of these mistakes. And you sit there discouraged because your results are being infected by these unwise trades. Sizing is a skill that must be learned, one that will impact your monthly results. As you increase your size, your biggest obstacle will be psychological. Jonel Stroh at West Virginia University, in the Journal of Psychological Science, highlighted the sunk cost fallacy, a mental state in which you are more likely to make a poor decision the more you invest. You may see your position working in your favor and be tempted to take some off the table prematurely. Franchise has remarked to me that this is something he is still working on as a trader. This is a very common hurdle to clear when you first start sizing up. This will just require some visualization exercises. Simply spend 5 minutes every day visualizing these setups. Manufacture the urge to lighten up in as much detail as possible. Expose the poor logic of so doing, and breathe through your fear. In a few months, you will rid your trading of these issues. Ari Kiev described this as skiing downhill and losing a little control of yourself while maintaining overall control throughout. Why comparisons can be harmful. Comparing yourself to another trader is not in your self-interest. Most successful traders are ultra-competitive, and it is human nature to want to be the best trader on the desk. But I just don't get it. Traders do not focus on how well they are doing, but rather compare themselves to other traders. This can be very harmful, and here's why. If you read any history of business or Wall Street in particular, success tends to be measured relative to competition. But when businesses and people try to be something they are not, the results can be disastrous. Just look at Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch, who tried to transform their businesses to be more like Goldman Sachs. How did that work out for them again? First, what makes you think that the trader you are comparing yourself to is in the same hemisphere as your trading talent? Just because someone sits next to you on a trading desk does not mean that his production has anything to do with your ability. Traders assume that since they are trained in a similar style and trade at the same firm, that they should do as well or better than the next guy. Let me be clear. The person sitting next to you, behind you, in front of you, a few rows from you, is not you. They may miss trades that you don't. They may wuss out of trades that you don't. They may not see the screen as clearly as you do. You are your own small business. How well you do depends on you, not comparing yourself to them. This should be your attitude. Steve, you are becoming the best trader on the desk. The Yipster, I am? Steve, you haven't noticed? The Yipster, honestly, and I don't mean to sound selfish, but I don't pay attention to what others are doing. Steve once told me, before we started at SMB, I never had any idea how others were doing, cared how they were doing, wanted to know how they were doing. What did that have to do with me? If you make $2,000 one day and you top the leaderboard for your experience level at your firm, this does not mean that you had a good day. You had a good day if you traded well. You had a good day if you took advantage of what the market offered you on this day. Who the hell cares what someone else on your desk did? What does that have to do with you? You only care that one guy doesn't blow up all the firm's capital so that you can't trade any firm capital anymore. Otherwise, just focus on you. With all this said, there's a reason great traders have few peers. It's lonely at the top. Be mentally agile. If you develop a bias for a stock and it trades the opposite of your bias, can you still make money? Of course you can. You just need to be mentally agile. This happens to Steve and me a minimum of once a week. We gather all the pre-market information necessary. We have traded for over a decade. We are acutely attuned with the present market. Let's say we develop a short bias for FDX, yet it trades higher all day. We will still crush the stock. That's why we call it trading and not investing. I call this being mentally agile. Others might call it preferring to make money than be right. Once you get over this mental roadblock, becoming consistently profitable is within reach. Traders are smart, strong-willed people. It is hard for them to admit when they are wrong. It is difficult to quickly take the opposite side of a trade. I am reminded of the applicable quote from legendary short seller Jesse Livermore quite often. There is only one side to the stock market, and it is not the bull side or the bear side, but the right side. While it's easier said than done, make sure you're on the right side. Trading both sides. Rambus was in play on a Friday in June of 2009, and we made some chops long on a slow summer day to its resistance, 1780. 17.80 was an important technical level. RMBS collapsed from this level previously. See figure 9.1 on your bonus material. 17.80 was an inflection point for us on this Friday and on Monday, and we made money on both sides using our trading skills. Let's discuss. Trading is not just about finding levels and then taking positions for most intraday traders. If it were that easy, you would not be listening to this book. Trading skills enable the intraday trader to determine when some levels will be violated and when some levels will hold. We combine our tape reading skills with our charting skills and our short-term intraday fundamental analysis to determine which resistance levels will hold. For example, on this Friday, we determined that the 1780 RMBS level would hold because there was more selling on the offer as RMBS neared 1780. There was a double intraday top at this level. The longer-term chart showed significant resistance. The buyers were hesitant to pay as aggressively above 1775. The news was not so important as to cause a violation of this significant resistance level on a first test. I lightened up with my intraday long position. Steve got short and caught a 50-cent down move. On Monday, we saw the strength from the tape in RMBS. The pullback was shallow on Friday from the important resistance level. RMBS was heading toward the 1780 resistance level again. The buying near this level Monday was aggressive. After 1780 held the bid, we got long. See figure 9.2 on your bonus material. When the bid held 85 cents, we got longer. When the bid held above 90 cents, we got even longer. RMBS traded up another point. Chop. We did not just rely on the charts to make decisions. We watched the order flow, used some fundamental analysis to weigh the new news in RMBS from Friday, and read our charts. Doing so allowed us to make chops on the short and long side, trading RMBS on two separate days. When I write about reading the tape and learning how to trade, this is exactly what I mean. When I discuss developing trading skills to profit in any market, these are the skills that are necessary. Trading is not about making calls. Trading is not just about reading charts. Trading is about skill development such that you can trade a stock in play on either side. Just check out the trading in RMBS during these two trading days. How do I make money today? So, during our AM meeting, October 13, 2008, Steve highlighted Morgan Stanley as his stock of the day. Steve said, "I'm going to look for a pullback right on the open and then look for MS to trade in an uptrend for the day." Now, that is what I call a great call. On the previous Friday, Steve mentioned MS as a stock to watch. He remarked that MS might see 18 during the trading day. Yet another great call. Steve played MS on the short side on Friday and MS on the long side today. He made money shorting MS on Friday and long MS today. So did our head trader, G-Man, taught by us. I preach for our traders to be mentally agile. We preach for our traders to follow the intraday trend on almost all occasions. SMB teaches its new traders trading plays that allow them to make money short and long. When I was taught how to trade, we did not watch CNBC during the day. We did not trade with charts. We had no breaking news feed. We were taught to watch the stock and determine its direction. Some of the most profitable traders on our desk could tell you Derek Jeter's road batting average against right-handed pitchers on AstroTurf during the day. If you ask them the PE of eBay, they probably would return a blank stare. Now, obviously, times have changed. Charts, breaking news, and the backup vocals of CNBC is standard at most firms. But honestly, if you shut down my charts, turned off CNBC, and closed our breaking news feed, I could still make plenty of money trading. I am a trader. If the stock were strong for the day, I would chop it up. If the stock were weak, my results would be similar. I don't care where a stock is going for the day. A short on a Friday of MS from 18 to 1750 is the same as my long from 1871 to 1921 today. The first thing new traders can do to improve their results is stop pretending they have a feel for where a stock may go. It will take at least 3 years before you will be able to develop a feel, just based on the news, for where a stock may trade. Watch the stock and trade it. When it's strong, get long. When it's weak, get short. Your job is to make one good trade. Your job is not to make predictions. CNBC is not calling you up to make calls on the market or stocks. Leave your unbending biases and opinions at the door when you step onto the trading floor. Our trading floor is for traders. It's for those who can make money on either side. It's for traders who ask, "How do I make money today?" It's called trading. Each day into the close during the summer of 2009, our intern Kristen asked Steve to share a trading idea for our Twitter feed, which was shared with the StockTwits community of most interested traders. On June 19th, Steve told her that he would short Apple below 138, but would cover above 138.15. Apple had failed at the 138 level earlier in the day and had a significant down move. Steve was risking 15 cents to make potentially $1. About 15 minutes after he put on the short position, Apple began to hold the bid above 138.10. Steve covered his short and got long. Steve is somewhat reluctant to give our interns a trading idea each afternoon for Twitter because he recognizes that not everyone who follows our tweets is a professional trader who can capitalize on the important inflection points we identify. Brian Shannon, the leading momentum technical analysis expert in the trading blogosphere, shares these same concerns with his followers. The job of professional traders like Brian and Steve is to be mentally agile so that they can make money regardless of the direction of the market or the stock that they are trading. So when Apple traded above his stop price of $138.10 and the price action indicated it was probably going to trade higher, then Steve got long. Other factors Steve considered were that Apple had broken its intraday downtrend and it was trading above its afternoon high. Within a few minutes of getting long at 138.16, Apple traded up to 138.50, which had been a huge inflection point during the previous 2 weeks. Steve sold his long and, in fact, got short. Once he saw that an offer couldn't hold below 138.50, Steve covered his short. He got long again when the next upleg began. The next upleg was so powerful and on such heavy volume that I decided to hold 2,000 shares until the market closed. All of the evidence on his screen was indicating that there was a huge buyer that would not be satisfied until Apple traded through its morning high of 139.13. Apple traded up in the after hours at 139.75, and Steve was still long 1,000 shares. Chop. Another interesting point about the money Steve made long with Apple is that he probably would have missed the entire move if he hadn't been willing to take the short position at 138. Observing the price action in Apple while Steve was short gave him confidence to get long when it traded through his stop price. So the 15-cent loss he took on 1,600 shares allowed him to make about $1.50 on 2,000. I'll take that trade-off any day. Trading is not about making market calls and being reliant solely on the accuracy of your biases. Trading is also remaining mentally agile and quickly absorbing that the market is sending a clear signal for the next move in your stock, like today in Apple above 138.10. Amen Corner. Amen Corner often offers the most exciting holes of golf at the Masters. On April 9, 2009, 1825 in Wells Fargo & Company was our Amen Corner for WFC. There was an easy short below this level when WFC was in an intraday downtrend. There was an easy long when WFC held above this level when WFC was in an intraday uptrend. Let's discuss. As intraday traders, we must be mentally agile. I couldn't care less where WFC finishes. When WFC is in a downtrend, then I look for opportunities to short. I shorted some WFC at 19 when it was clearly in a downtrend. I shorted some more when WFC broke to downside after consolidation at 1850. I shorted some more when 1825 sold a massive amount of stock. But then WFC's pattern changed near 1750. The offers lifted quickly above 1750. I had not seen offers lift quickly the entire down move. Also, WFC stuck near the 1760 level and did not make a new low. I had not seen this during the entire down move, so I covered. When WFC traded to 18, I shorted again. But when WFC showed me its strength holding above 18, I flipped my position. I started a long position. When WFC traded easily through the huge 1825 resistance level, I added to my position. For the rest of the trading day, I bought into pullbacks, made the spread, and held my core long position. I was mentally agile. When WFC was weak, I was short. When WFC was strong, I was long. For those interested in an excellent book on technical analysis that teaches the new trader the importance of following the trend, read Brian Shannon's book. I utilized the principles that Brian teaches to trade WFC profitably on this trading day, though I can also not overlook the invaluable contribution that wearing my Masters polo shirt while trading that day must have had on my results. So the developing trader must learn to be mentally agile. Let's move on to another skill you won't learn anywhere but on a prop trading desk. Stay with it. Consistently profitable traders get shaken out and then find a way to get back into a good stock. Poor traders complain about getting shaken out. These lesser traders recall in detail how they were screwed. For example, I once had a conversation with a developing trader on our desk who got shaken out in Oshkosh. Developing trader: look what happened in OSK, Bella. I got long above the 1880 level. OSK went to 19 and then had a sharp down move to 1867 where I hit the bottom. See figure 9.3 on your bonus material. What a screw job. Bella: did you get back in when it pulled back to 19? Developing trader: no, I was done with it after that. Well, okay, he got screwed. So? So does everyone else. Are you special because you got screwed? Do you think I, or the market, has any sympathy? That is not the approach you should take. A good trader hits the bid during the shakeout and takes his loss. But then the solid trader buys OSK when it trades above 19 again. And then a winning trader buys more when OSK pulls back to 19. The consistently profitable trader takes a loss during the shakeout, but then catches OSK for a point up move with two lots. And for those keeping score at home, that is a $2,000 gain minus a $250 loss. You can't ask for much better than that. A lesser trader's screw job is a consistently profitable trader's opportunity. Some traders will require a few failed trades before they catch the move. This is the game we have all chosen to play. It may take time to get on the right side of a trade. For the intraday trader, it is important to be on the right side of the stock and catch the move right before it happens. While easier said than done, there are reasons why this is true. Understanding exactly what should make your stock move will enable you to load up at a given moment, and then if your stock does not start acting as you expect, you can lighten up immediately. Jesse Livermore counseled, "It isn't as important to buy as cheap as possible as it is to buy at the right time." Essentially, as an intraday prop trader, I am buying very cheap options all day long. I spot a stock that is trending. I find a great price to enter. And then, often, I can spot a catalyst that ought to make my stock trade higher, and trade higher right now. I load up. Hence, I purchase my option to catch this stock if it explodes right at this moment. And if it does not immediately trade higher, then I lighten up. I scratch or make a small gain on the extra shares I have purchased. So in essence, if the stock was to explode, I would have been loaded and made a huge chop. But when it does not, then I get out for a small gain or maybe some small transaction cost losses. Golfers often talk about controlling their ball or controlling the direction and distance of their golf shots. As a trader, I want to be in control of my trades. I want to be loaded, with protection, in stocks that are trending up, after I spot a catalyst. Spotting these catalysts helps me make more in a trade, limit my risk, improve my consistency, and lower my mental stress. Are you in control of your trades? If not, then you are probably not scoring well. On the long side, the best catalyst that we spot is called a held bid in an uptrending stock. When a bid is smacked quickly and for a significant size, and this bid does not drop, that is what we call a held bid. If the stock was not strong, the bid would have dropped and the buyer would have bought cheaper. When we spot a held bid for a stock in an uptrend, we then add size to our position and now expect an immediate upmove. This held bid foreshadows a large market order more times than not. And there are short-term shorts who are now caught on the wrong side who need to cover. We expect sellers to cover and the buyers to step up next. But there are a series of catalysts, not just the bread-and-butter held bid in an uptrending stock. And these are different for the time period we are trading. But we must understand what makes our stocks go up and down so we can add size at the appropriate moment while minimizing our risk. Spotting catalysts helps us control our risk. Another terrific example of a catalyst that I use is a huge print. On your bonus material is a chart of Visa, where a 4 million share print went across at $58.93. See figure 9.4. Immediately after this print, V ticked down. I follow the direction of the ticks directly after such a huge print. I added to my short in V instantly after V ticked down, and held V to near its next support at 58. This was a chop. This catalyst helped me add to a position that was already working for me. Developing if-then statements. For each of the trades that I make, I develop if-then statements. For a support and resistance trade, I have created if-then statements. Same with a momentum trade. And that is not all. For the many subsets of each trade, I have also created if-then statements. There is just not one type of support and resistance trade. There are at least 10 variations. For a momentum trade, there are a series of probable, possible ways that a stock may trade. I have predetermined how I will trade this setup, and in each possible way. And then, after I spot the momentum trade, I have a framework for execution. Let me give an example of when I was trading Mosaic. 48 was support. I got long. If 48 dropped the bid, then I would exit. It did, so I exited. If there were a held bid just below 48, then I would get long again. At 47.95, there was a held bid, so I re-entered. See figure 9.5 on your bonus material. And I made a chop on this trade as MOS exploded higher. But what is most important is that I had predetermined plans of action with a handful of if-then statements. And then I just did what I told myself to do. Simple enough, no? Too many developing traders try to determine how to trade a setup in the middle of a trade. For the active intraday trader, in-play stocks move too fast for this. We do not have time to think about the best course of action intra-trade. We have to determine our framework for options beforehand. If-then statements should be different for each individual trader. We all process information differently. Some are faster. Some have a greater tolerance for risk. Some are more experienced. Some trade at a different time frame. But I have considered all the different ways my stock may trade before I enter. So if my stock acts a certain way, I am not surprised. I have considered everything the stock may do. I may find a move to be unusual, but again, I have considered this. And now I just react to the trade I am ready for. With well-developed if-then statements, your results will be more consistent. I received a very disappointing email from a college student who asked his professor about HFT and received a half-hour rant on how intraday trading equities is reckless gambling. It can be if you do not develop thorough if-then statements. I will add a Warren Buffett quote here as well. Risk comes from not knowing what you are doing. If-then statements help to make your trading more uniform on a monthly basis. Your results will be less based upon being right on a few big plays. With if-then statements and active trading, you, in effect, are running your own profitable gray box or black box in the marketplace. Roy Davis, Director of SMB Remote Training. If-then statements are so important to the new trader that I was scolded by Roy Davis, SMB's Director of Remote Training, about their place in our training program. Roy felt that they were not being properly emphasized, and Roy started a heated debate internally about their best placement and insistence on trader compliance. Thankfully, Roy was right. We made improvements to our if-then statements analysis and location within our training program. We saw an immediate improvement in the results of our new traders. Roy started this debate by proclaiming that the single most important task by the new trader during the first part of our training program is completing their if-then statements. In fact, he insisted our traders cannot go live unless they submit to their mentor their if-then statements for each trading setup. Not only do they have to submit their statements to their mentor, but their mentor must approve them and communicate that to our floor manager. Now, no one trades a play live until their if-then statements have been submitted and approved by a mentor and our floor manager. And then, after each week, Our new traders adjust their if-then statements for the market they are presently trading, which is again reviewed by their mentor. It sounds pretty tedious, but this is the work required to compete. We are always tweaking, adjusting, and rethinking our if-then statements for each of our trading setups. And no one enters a setup without understanding specifically, comprehensively, and automatically how he will trade each different setup. As Roy preached, this can make all the difference. If-then statements. Traders develop their own statements for support and resistance levels, but here are some good examples for new traders. Just to add some trader authenticity, they are not neatly written complete sentences that you would hand in to an English teacher, but they are all if-then suggestions for the intraday trader. If the 30 bid is tested with significant volume on the bid and holds, then get long. If the 30 bid holds with significant volume, then trade to hold. If the 30 holds, then ask, who is the buyer? If the 30 holds and slows, then sell if the buyer is not near or a thick offer near. If 30 holds and slows and the buyer is near the offer, then hold. If 30 holds and the bid step up, then consider another lot. If 30 holds and the bid step up and hold higher, then add another lot. If 30 holds and a ton of volume is done on the bid, then do not sell until a reason to sell. If 30 holds and a moderate or light amount of volume is done on the bid, then sell when slows or significant up move. If 30 holds and then drops, then sell. If 30 holds with a ton of volume and then drops, then sell and consider flipping. Above 30, then long, and below 30, then short. If 30 holds and then drops, then the stock should trade lower and lower quickly. If 30 holds, drops, and offers do not step lower to 30 or below, and a significant bid is present at $29.99 or $29.98 or $29.97, then wait for the bid to decrement or disappear. If 30 holds, drops, but significant bid within 3 cents and confident that you can hit that bid, then okay to wait for the bid to decrement or disappear if another bid right beneath at $29.96 or above. If 30 holds, then drops, and there are some bids at $29.97 or $29.98 or $29.99, and the 30 offer is tested and holds, then get short. If 30 holds and then drops quickly to $29.90 with a significant bid at $29.90 and you couldn't get out, then place order at $29.97 or lower, based upon your judgment to sell. A. Start at $29.97 and come lower quickly if not taken to $29.95. B. Hit the $29.90 bid if can't get taken on the offer and bid decrements or little protection beneath the bid. If 30 holds and then drops, and $29.90 is tested and holds the bid, then buy back and use $29.90 as support. If 30 holds and then drops, and $29.93 then holds on the bid after being tested, then buy back, and if 30 rebids and is tested and holds, then add another lot. If you add a second lot, then trade the second lot as a momentum play, and the first lot as a support play. If 30 holds the bid and 30.03 holds the offer, and 30 drops and you hit the stock, and then the bid holds a little lower than 30, and then 30.03 lifts, then get long again. If 30 holds and then drops, and then rebids and is tested on the bid and holds, then get long again. If 30 holds, then drops and rebids, and the offer is not until 30.07 or better, then bid if underlying bid at $29.98 or better. If 30 holds and you bid 30.01 and you can't get hit, then bid 30.02, and if you can't get hit, then consider taking 30.03. If 30 holds and you bid 30.01 and 30.02 and 30.03 and you can't get hit and the offer is 30.10, then bid based upon the volume at 30. A. The more volume, the higher you can bid. B. Risk versus reward should be 5 to 1. C. If the volume at 30 indicates that the stock should trade to 30.50, then you can buy as high as 30.10. If the 30 holds and the offer is 30.05 and you bid 30.01 and you are immediately joined, then this is a sign of strength. If 30 holds and the offer is 30.05 and you bid 30.01 and are immediately cut at 30.02, then this is a sign of strength. Best trades when you notice a ton of volume at 30 and the stock holds and then you step in front of the bid, get hit, and hold until a reason to sell. Knowing your best trading plays. On a recent StockTwits TV SMB University broadcast, I pounded the podium pleading, "To improve as a trader, you must determine which setups make the most sense to you, and then you must make more of them and with more size." Well, I know this is going to sound simple, but not enough traders make more of their absolute best trades. But how many traders truly understand their best trading plays and maximize the opportunities in these plays? Let me add some personal color to this section. I do not make any trades with size at any time, under any circumstance, in any market. Okay, I'm starting to pull a Michael Scott here from the TV show The Office. No matter what is going through my mind, unless they are my best trades, I just don't. I know what my best plays are. I know exactly what I am looking for from the market. And I don't color the tape and my charts so that I falsely create a play that is not really one of my best trading plays. Call me a double aces only player in Texas Hold'em, but unlike poker, I don't have to place a regular ante into the market. I can choose not to do anything and pay only for my infrastructure. At the end of the month, I look at my trading results and I know that I did the best that I could. My month was spent in the trades that worked best for me. Knowing what my best is comes with experience. Now, not every month is outstanding, but what more can I do? I stick with my strengths. I risk my money on the plays that, statistically and historically, are most profitable for me. And this is how I score. Here is one of my favorite plays. Amgen gapped up in the AM. It did not pull back much. 50 cents, as drawn on figure 9.6 on your bonus material, was a huge intraday resistance level. And finally, Amgen got above this level. I got long and loaded up with three lots. I sold one early because Amgen had not held above the level. I sold the other when it had trouble clearing the 80-cent level. But I held my last lot. And I was not going to sell this lot until there was a reason to sell. A predefined system for exiting our trades to hold. I made a little on the first two lots, but lost on the third. I cannot control the results. All I can do is make one good trade. And this was one of them. I was in complete control of this trade. I was loaded with one of my favorite setups. Amgen did not react as I had anticipated, but I can live with this trade. My job is to find these statistically profitable setups and execute. If I spend the month making thousands of trades like this, it will be an awesome month. How to end a trading slump. We all slump. The problem is not slumping, but rather letting the slump last for an extended period of time. You must learn how to get out of the slump. Let's discuss. One of our most competitive traders once initiated a meeting with me, apologetic about his recent slide. I laugh thinking about how many slumps I've been through in my trading career. How many times have I wondered if this was the end for me? Sometimes I actually go home, sit on my couch, and wonder if I am capable of continuing as a trader. And I would say I have done this at least twice a year for the past 12 years. This is a healthy process, as long as these thoughts are then replaced by solutions. This is healthy because I do not want to feel this way. My personal disgust with my trading and inability to accept failure fuels an internal need to improve immediately. It forces you to focus on what you do best as a trader, and then execute. You either get better or go home, just like a pro athlete. So, for this most competitive trader, I suggested that he make only his best trades for the next week, set a goal to just be positive, and lower his tier size. I wanted him to make things easier. He went right back to making money. This did not surprise me in the slightest. After all, I have 12 years of trading